Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for the second part of It's All About Food. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for the second part of It's All About Food. Today, 2013. Oh, goodness. So here we are, and we are going to bring on the next guest, because I really can't wait to start this segment. Dr. Deb Kimless. Dr. Deb conducted her undergraduate coursework and graduated with a B.S. in biology and natural science, Phi Beta Kappa and magnum cum laude at Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania. She earned her medical degree at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey and completed her residency at the Temple University Hospital in Philadelphia and is board certified in anesthesiology and pain medicine. Dr. Deb obtained her plant-based nutrition certification from Cornell University and is a certified nutritional consultant through the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and does private nutritional consultation. There we go. And so much more which you're going to find about in the next half hour. Welcome to It's All About Food, Dr. Deb.
Hi, Karen. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, I wanted to say before we got started, sometimes you meet someone that you really connect with, and that happened when I met you just a few months ago, and we haven't had really an opportunity to catch up, and so I'm going to use this half hour to get to know more about you and catch up, and everybody can just listen in.
It sounds great.
But you're definitely someone who is a hard worker, really smart, and has learned how to just accept what life brings along.
Thank you. You're very
yeah. So let's get started. You worked as a medical doctor, anesthesiologist. What were you doing as a doctor?
Yeah, I was a full-time practitioner in anesthesiology. I guess in all of the realms of medicine, I truly believed in better living through chemistry.
That's funny. My first job out of college was with DuPont, and that was their slogan, better living through chemistry. And a lot of us really signed up for that a few decades ago, really believing that that was where all the magic lies. And, gosh, we're now living the results of those ideas.
Exactly, exactly.
Some good, some not so good.
Very true. The chemistry part of it, you know, you buy into it, especially when you study and you work and this is what's taught to you and you think that's the panacea, that, you know, these medicines will treat and cure and prevent and do all those things.
There's I mentioned to you when we met, there's a book that a friend of mine wrote, When Doctors Become Patients. And it's something that I think is so important for doctors to understand the patient point of view. I think our medical care would be so much better. And
well, at least our sick care will be so much better.
Our sick care. Yeah, that's definitely right. So you developed breast cancer.
I did. In 2005, in October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I had a baseline study of an MRI, a breast MRI, after a normal mammogram. This, I fit into the category of people that should get this, which is someone with extremely dense breast tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, what started out as a baseline study resulted in a double mastectomy and reconstruction surgery.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not what you expected at all.
No, it was pretty much a pretty big mind blow, and thought that I would just sort of fast track my treatment because I had a big S on my chest and I was superwoman. And I guess the universe had other plans for me because I ended up with something called post-mastectomy pain syndrome, which truly is a misnomer. It should just be called post-breast surgery pain syndrome. Where even though I'm cancer-free and the clean bill of health in that regard, I'm left with a neuropathic pain that sadly has prevented me from practicing as an anesthesiologist.
Wow. Now, I haven't heard of that. Is that because it's people don't talk about it, or how prevalent is it?
Well, that's the crazy thing about this pain syndrome. It's sort of a deep, dark, dirty secret. As you were kind enough to annotate all of my, you know, certifications, I am boarded in pain medicine and knew nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And so when I developed this pain syndrome, I thought I was going out of my mind, and I never heard of any kind of thing. And it wasn't even on the charts in 1974 when a group of Israeli surgeons started listening to their patients and hearing that they were complaining of this pain after having breast surgery. Now, from 74 to the 90s, they only thought about 4% of women get it. Now they think, after studies out of the Scandinavian countries, upwards of 50% of women have some degree of pain after breast surgery. And when I say breast surgery, it could mean lumpectomy. Mm. It can be mastectomy with or without reconstruction. It could be elective breast reduction, or it can be elective breast augmentation.
Does anybody have an idea of what causes it?
Well, you know, they really don't know for sure, but if you think about the breast and you think about the nerve connections that go into the breast,
mm-hmm.
there's a question about why we wouldn't have thought of it. I mean, think about it. It's an erogenous zone.
Yeah.
If it's cold, and you're wearing the improper undergarments, people kind of know you're chilly. If you just delivered a baby and someone else's baby cries, you let down milk.
Wow.
So, I mean, you've got tactile, you know, sensory, auditory connections, nerve connections, all kinds of nerve pathways. And when you cut on the breast, those nerves get disrupted. And so a lot of studies think of neuropathic pain, which is sort of likened to phantom limb pain.
Yeah. You know, I'm grateful for the medical community. I'm absolutely certain that they were part of saving my life. But we still don't know so much. And any time a body is cut open and stuff is moved around and taken out, we never put it back the way it's supposed to. And we feel the result. I mean, I know I had 3 major abdominal surgeries, and my intestines just are not the same.
Right.
You know, I feel them sometimes trying to, like, get into a comfortable place because they got all shifted and moved around, and the muscle has to reform, and it's harder as an adult to accommodate a ready-made body rather than a baby that's growing all of those things as it gets bigger. It's kind of crazy. Anyway, so you endured this, unfortunately. And another thing I wanted to say is because our medical care, our sick care, whatever you want to call it, is so economically based, I found that when I stopped going to a particular doctor who was treating me for chemotherapy, just as one example, nobody was overseeing me other than me. And there wasn't anyone to talk to about the side effects or the things I was feeling after everything was done. They don't talk about it. You hear very little about what's going to happen after a particular treatment. And the surprises can be painful.
It's really sort of surprising, isn't it? I mean, I was lucky that my breast cancer was caught very early, and so surgery was my treatment. So I didn't have an oncologist or a radiation oncologist or any other follow-up except for a surgeon. So I was sort of a woman without an island, so to speak.
Yep.
And, you know, it was very interesting. And not until I met with other women and noted some physical behaviors, like they would put a finger and press really hard underneath there where their breast fold would be if they had a breast. And I would call them on it and say, why are you doing that? Because I know I do it, and I know why I do it.
Mm.
They said, oh, because it hurts.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, did you ever talk with anyone about it? Did you ever seek any help? Oh, no, you know, it's sort of like the forever grateful thing. They're grateful that they're alive, and they're grateful that they're cancer-free, and they're grateful that their medical community took care of them the way they did, and they sort of suck up the rest of it.
You know, I want to talk about some of your solutions, but just one more thing, and that is people that choose elective surgery, for example, if they've had breast cancer and then they decide in order to prevent subsequent cancer, ovarian, let's say they'll have a total hysterectomy, and vice versa. Some that have had ovarian cancer will elect to have a double mastectomy even though there's no sign of disease. And I have a really hard time with this, and a lot of this genetic testing that's going on that will show that we have an increased risk for one thing or another, because there are other things that we can do to reduce our risk and probably really make a better difference. But the thing that they don't talk about is what you're going to feel after this elective surgery. When women have a total hysterectomy, it screws up their whole hormonal balance, especially if they have it before menopause, and there's a lot of subsequent discomfort that they're going to feel. And was it even necessary without disease present?
And I think a lot of it, is fear-based decision-making.
Fear-based, exactly. Fear-based.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, when you were in school, did they teach you to scare patients?
I think that doctors go in with a full heart and really feel and truly believe in what they say. I really do. I don't think that any doctor is out there to do a disservice or an injustice. And I think, especially when it comes to oncologists, I liken them to the Terminator, where they want to continue regardless of what the consequence is or the collateral damage, to kill every potential cancer cell that's out there. And I think that's sort of the mindset, the very sort of aggressive kind of macho way of dealing with it. And then if you're on the receiving end of this information, you hear someone, you know, saying they want to, you know, destroy the thing that is making you sick, and any potential therein, even if it's got a low percentage of helping you survive even further, you know, like increase your life expectancy by 2%, 3%, whatever, you know, the small percentages are, I think the patient is really scared and feels that their health and well-being is in the hands of this well-meaning physician.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm done with best intention.
Well, I got to give a lot of oncologists credit for doing what they're doing, because they are exposed to a lot of bad things, to seeing all these people that are so devastated to be diagnosed with a disease, and some of them are curable or not curable or somewhere in the middle, and they lose a significant amount of patients, and it can't be fun. So I give them a lot of credit. Now, let's move on to the happy side of this, and let's introduce our virtual guest, Plant Foods. And where did Plant Foods fit into this picture? How did they come into your life?
In sort of an odd but not odd way. I mean, since I was 13 years old, I was always fascinated with diet and nutrition. The challenge was we didn't have internet back in the days where, you know, dinosaurs ruled the earth, and I grew up. And so at that point in my life, I gave up red meat and refined carbohydrate, thinking, you know, those things were evil.
Yep.
But but still thinking that, you know, white meat, poultry and fish and drinking skim or low-fat milk and eating low-fat dairy products was still okay, because sadly I was marketed to like the rest of the world and didn't have any checks and balances where I could see the veracity of any of that. And so as I got older, here I ended up with this breast cancer thing and no family history of it. And I don't smoke and I don't drink and I exercise and I think I'm eating a really, really well for the standard American. And my husband ended up with a immunologic issue and my father ended up with a quadruple bypass.
Hmm.
And all of these things sort of happened and I'm looking going, this is not right. It didn't make sense. And the tipping point for me was my mom, who is a fair-skinned, small-framed woman, was put on a bisphosphonate drug, a drug that used to increase bone density, not because she had osteoporosis, but as a prophylactic to prevent it.
Mm.
And was given that, like, to take, you know, routinely for the rest of her life. And she was standing in an elevator several years ago and called me on her cell phone saying, I'm in trouble. I think I just broke my leg standing.
Oh.
And sure enough, x-rays revealed that not only did she break one femur, which is her thigh bone, the largest, strongest bone in her body, but she broke both of them. And that just was a game changer for me. So I started doing research. I started finding out that perhaps bisphosphonates as a knee-jerk response for every female in the country was not the way to go. And then I started questioning everything, because here my mom has, you know, sports two titanium rods, one down each leg, because she took a medication as directed, and her drug-pushing, chemically huge proponent, physician daughter encouraged it.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Well,
and so literally I started doing research. I started questioning every single thing that I knew, medically speaking. And I came about Dr. Colin Campbell's book, The China Study, and I started to read it. And it was just mind-blowing to me. And then I found Dr. Esselstyn's reversal of heart disease.
Preventive heart disease, yep.
Right. And the common denominator was this plant-based nutrition. And then I took the course from Cornell through Dr. Colin Campbell. And it was a total game-changing, life-altering experience for me, my family. And now I sort of cherry-pick patients. And I get people off their diabetes drugs. I get them off their blood pressure pills. I get them to lose tremendous amounts of weight and regain vitality that they haven't seen in decades.
Well, I'm sorry what happened to you happened, but I'm glad you're doing what you're doing today.
You know what? I'm not sorry, because, you know, life throws curveballs at all of us, and I'm healthy, and I'm here today speaking with you, and I have a whole new sort of career path and lust for helping people, help empower themselves, and recognize that these things that happen to us, these chronic medical problems, really don't have to happen. And as Dr. Esselstyn says, the majority of this stuff are foodborne illnesses. We get it from how we eat.
Yep, foodborne illnesses. That's what we have, unfortunately. Well, how depressing is it for so many doctors today who go in with an open heart and want to learn all that they can to help people get well? And they go in every day and see all these sick people, and most of them are not even getting well. And they might give them a fix or a patch or a drug or something to let them hold on, but they're not getting well. And what you're doing is empowering people, and they're getting well. How great does that feel?
It's amazing. It truly is amazing, because the truth of the matter is, when you get nothing out of throwing pills at people. you know, when you throw pills at people and hear this is a pill for your blood pressure and this is a pill for this, I mean, there was always a part in me that said none of it made sense.
Were you practicing medicine?
Before the
epiphany.
Yeah. So I was diagnosed in 2005, so I was practicing 19 years before I stopped.
And I'm sure you have a lot of colleagues that you met during all that time. What do they think about what you're doing today?
Sadly, the majority of them think I'm out of my mind.
And don't they see what you've gone through? And
it's really sort of sad. And several of them who are really like smart people have these chronic illnesses,
mm-hmm.
and chalk it up to genetics.
Yep.
And feel like there's nothing else they could do because their genetics dictates the disease that they're going to have. And I keep telling them that genetics is a loaded gun, but our diet pulls the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that you don't have to sort of acquiesce and sort of give into what you think you're going to suffer with. And there's a great example. There is a physician in Boston, young woman in her 30s, who was on three different blood pressure pills because she knew she was always going to be hypertensive because everybody in her family was hypertensive.
Right.
She got a hold of the China study, read about it, followed it, and is off all of her medicines.
Mm-hmm. Just like
that. Right. It was amazing.
Anecdotal.
It's not anecdotal because there's evidence-based science that shows this stuff. I mean, and that's the goofy thing about this, is that there's more evidence-based research on the chronic diseases going away with plant-based versus Lipitor or any of the other cholesterol busting medications helping to prevent heart disease.
You know, there's so much information that shows how the power of plants is so much more effective than any of the drugs on the market. And of course I was sarcastic when I said it was anecdotal,
yes,
but that's the response that you hear all the time from doctors.
Absolutely. No, it's crazy.
Yes. Anyway, so unfortunately you've experienced a great deal of pain from your surgery, and you came up with some products to help women that have been through breast surgery. Can we talk about Red Thread?
Oh, I'd love to.
Let's go.
So, Red Thread's another passion of mine. After being frustrated with my pain, and frustrated that I didn't want to take a boatload of pills to mask the pain, I needed to search out a way that I could, A, help reduce the pain that I was feeling, and also I didn't like the way I looked after my breast cancer surgery, because even though you get implants or reconstruction or whatever it is, you don't look normal.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't look pre-surgical. So I designed clothing and then breast enhancers to, A, help with pain, and, B, help me look better. And so it helps with pain because I sought out super soft, stretchy / compressible material that goes around the chest that compresses. So if you think about different pain-relieving mechanisms, if you stub your toe, the first thing you do is curse. The second thing you do is you grab your toe and you squeeze it, and that's a real live pain relieving mechanism.
Mm.
So compression, and so compression helps with pain, and not the kind of compression that smooths out bumps and lumps, because that's a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a compression that goes around the chest that really helps reduce the amount of pain, and it doesn't feel like your clothes are banging on your chest. And then I developed a patent-pending easy access pocket that goes on the inside, that's built into the shirt, that if you have a prosthetic, you can use it. Or if you don't like the way you look, even after reconstruction, I created something I call breast shapers, which literally is like a shapewear for the breast that just gives you your missing apex in shape and form that you lose after surgery.
Very nice. And I'm sure you've helped a lot of women feel better as a result.
You know, I think part of healing is emotional as well as physical.
And if you certain about that. No doubt about that at all.
So if you are not feeling good about how you look and your clothes don't fit right and you don't like, you know, your silhouette and clothes don't feel right, the healing process is going to be adversely affected.
Deb, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. We're at the end, and I haven't had enough time with you, so we're going to have to pick up this conversation another time.
Okay.
Thanks for joining me, Dr. Deb Kimless, founder of the Red Thread. What's your website?
RedThreadByDrDeb.com.
RedThreadByDrDeb.com. Very good. I'm Karen Hartglass. Please visit ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. That's my website. And we'll be back next week with more about food because it is all about food. Have a delicious week.